Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
It's an absolute pleasure now to welcome our next guest onto the Business Bunker show this afternoon. For the very first time, it's a pleasure to introduce Kim Fleet. Good afternoon, Kim. How are you?
Oh, good afternoon, Paul. Thank you for inviting me onto the show. I'm very well, thank you.
And what a beautiful dress.
Oh, thank you.
Look at the colour. Let me describe it. It's a really beautiful sort of powdery sky blue, would you call it?
Yeah, I think so. I felt like being summery today, even though it's actually pouring with rain here.
Is it? Where are you based?
I'm in Gloucestershire, and I'm looking out at a very grey sky and the trees sort of tossing around in the wind.
Oh, it sounds lovely though.
Yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful dress for all the listeners listening. I know that the lady listeners, we do like a dress, and it's gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. That's really kind of you.
Right, now we've finished talking about sartorial elegance.
Fashion.
And fashion. I thought she was talking to me at first, Kim.
No.
Why don't we kick off, Kim, by you telling us a little bit about Kim and what it is you do.
Sure. Well, I'm an author. I write novels. I'm a writing coach and I'm a ghostwriter. So,
right.
In a nutshell.
Spooky.
Yes.
And what are you a doctor of?
I'm a doctor of anthropology.
Wow, I love that. My youngest son's, we're just going to diverse now. My youngest son's lovely girlfriend of 4 or 5 years, Mimi, did anthropology at Canterbury University.
Oh, cool.
She's now working in HR. But I studied anthropology at school many years ago and I found it absolutely fascinating. Yeah. Whether I had a really good teacher, but it was really riveting, gripping. Mm.
Funny enough, I'm an amateur paleoanthropologist. I've read a lot of research papers and done a lot of reading and stuff on it. And one of the things that I like about a subject like anthropology is how relevant it still is today. How you know, the evolution of human behavior and human systems and human cultures has kind of arrived at where we are. But we aren't here to talk about that.
No, but I've got to read all these books. I'm fascinated.
Yeah, we're here to talk about writing. So let's segment that up a bit, Kim. Sure. You're a published author.
Yep.
And you write novels. Am I right in saying they're primarily crime novels?
And they're murder mysteries and crime novels. So as an anthropologist, I worked in Australia with Aboriginal people for quite a number of years.
Mm.
And when I came home, people had all sorts of questions for me. And it was sort of obvious that, you know, people didn't really know much about what was happening in Aboriginal society and cultures out in Australia. Mm. And I'd experienced all sorts of things that I was sort of trying to process. And so I started writing about it. And so I wrote a murder mystery set in the outback called Sacred Site. And
sorry to interrupt. Was that set in a modern Aboriginal setting? Or
yeah.
Okay.
So it's a very very much influenced by the experiences I'd had working in land rights with Aboriginal people.
Mm.
And it was a way sort of to explore some of the things that I'd experienced, but also just to talk about what contemporary Aboriginal culture is like, just a little bit, because it's so vast and varied, you know, you can't cover all of it in one book.
Because Kim, Dr. Kim, I should call you, the only Aboriginal person I've ever heard of is Yvonne Goolagong.
Yeah.
From years ago, and all our young listeners won't even probably know her.
For all our listeners that are still alive, Ms. Goolagong was a very world-class tennis player.
She was amazing.
I just wanted to let them know that. Yeah,
yeah. And probably still is around, I would think.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But, you know, as an English person, all I know is that they, a bit like the Native American Indians, lost a lot of their land, and many of them couldn't cope with the way they were having to live and turned to alcohol and things. What would you say about that?
Yeah, it's true. They've had huge swathes of their land taken from them. And of course, Australian Aboriginal people have experienced a stolen generation as well, where their children were taken from them.
Gosh.
Who I was working with, they'd three generations of them had experienced that, where three generations of their family had had children taken away. And it's devastating for the people, because they've lost their children, they're not able to pass on their culture. And when the children grow up and discover where they're from and they want to sort of reconnect with that heritage, again, it's very difficult. And sometimes there comes a point where just too much time has gone past. Mm. And that connection is always sort of, for some people, a bit fractured. And it makes life incredibly difficult for them. And, you know, those stresses come out.
Yeah, absolutely.
God, that's
So you returned from Australia and you started writing murder mystery novels. Mm. Can I ask you a contentious question?
You can.
Are you a secret perfect murderer? Are you trying to plan the perfect murder?
I have a really spooky story about that, actually. I was at a workshop about all sorts of different areas of crime and crime writing a few years ago, and they put on a very nice buffet lunch. And over the buffet lunch, I got talking to a woman and she said, "Do you think there is a perfect murder?" And I said, "Yeah, I think that I could do it." And I told her mine. And I said, "What about you?" And she then proceeded to describe in the greatest detail exactly how she would murder her husband. The thing that really scared me was that she had been establishing her alibi for a few years by that.
She really thought that she had a plan.
Gosh.
Absolutely terrified me. And so for weeks afterwards, I was scouring the paper because she planned to make it look like an accident. And I was scouring the local paper for this story of local man dies.
Yeah. How brilliant. Oh, I like it. So how many novels have you published now, Kim?
Five.
Cool.
Yeah. And where can we find these novels? Because I'm definitely going to get Sacred Sight. That's exciting me straight away. And that was your first book, wasn't it?
Yeah, Sacred Sight was the first one. That one is annoyingly out of print at the moment, but I'm hoping to get it re-released.
No, you've tempted me. I mean, you know.
But I've recently I've been writing a detective series set in Cheltenham. Featuring a private eye called Eden Gray, who seems to be the unluckiest business owner in the world, really, because every one of her clients seems to get bumped off at some point. And they're available from bookshops and from Amazon as well.
Okay.
It's funny you should say that. It's like Midsummer Murders, isn't it? Everybody says, well, why would you live in Midsummer? Yeah, everybody dies there. Why does everybody move there? Absolutely.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I think I'm doing that to Cheltenham. I've not got quite the Midsummer Murders.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm getting there.
So you've written five novels now. And I'm assuming that you really enjoy the process of writing fiction.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. And you know how to murder us all if we annoy you. But you've also written a lot of magazine articles and blogs and things like that. I'm just interested in your journey, because obviously you studied anthropology. Mm-hmm. And presumably during the course of your studies, you had to write dissertations and all that kind of stuff. Is that where you discovered a joy for writing, or was it something you've always had? Have you always enjoyed writing?
I think I've always had it. And rather sort of alarmingly, the first book I wrote was when I was nine.
Right.
And my dad gave me this little book, and it's called How to Write Your Own Novel. And it was actually aimed at children.
Wow.
I read it, and for the first time in my life, it sort of dawned on me that all these books that I really loved reading were actually written by somebody, and someone had that as their job. And with all the wonderful confidence of a nine-year-old, I decided, well, that will be me. Mm. And so I wrote this book, which again has got sort of a little bit of a murder mystery in it, because it's about some children who go back in time and uncover a plot to assassinate Elizabeth I and put Mary Queen of Scots on the throne. a little bit alarming at nine now, I think.
That's practically treason, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
But what books did you grow up reading, Kim?
All sorts. My parents, I was really lucky that my parents both of them absolutely adored books, and they bought huge numbers of books, and also my dad went to the library about 3 or 4 times a week.
Lovely.
And they had a rule that if you could read it, you could read it. So there was no book in the house that was regarded as unsuitable for children. Mm. And Dad was very good at sort of putting books into my hands and saying, here, have a go at this.
Mm.
So I read really eclectically from really quite a young age. So it could be sort of Enid Blyton, then James Herriot, then Jane Austen, then Joyce. It really was incredibly mixed, which was wonderful.
I mean, for me growing up, it was obviously The Secret Seven and The Famous Five and Enid Blyton. And, you know, all my play at that age was around that. You know, we had the adventures that they had and we reenacted it and that. And I find it quite sad that children perhaps aren't doing that as much now, and that they're much more on laptops and things like that. What's your take on that?
I agree with you. And I think there's nothing quite like that sensation of reading when you're a child, when you're just absolutely engrossed in the book, completely unaware of what's around you. I mean, I guess in some ways, sort of having your nose stuck in a book and being engrossed in another world is kind of similar in a way to being online and engrossed, because, you know, if you're still in your imagination.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Then, I don't think I can kind of criticise kids for being away in another world when I spent most of my childhood doing that.
Absolutely. I'm a bit weird. I absolutely adore reading. I've got a huge library next door of my own books. But for the last 4 or 5 years, I haven't bought a book physically. I download all of my books. I'm an incredibly quick reader, and I read series of books. And one of the beauties about digital is you get to the end of the book, you download the next one and carry on reading.
Yeah.
And I read them all on my phone, which is terrible for my eyesight.
That is awful. I mean, I've got a Kindle.
But the problem, thing is, I have my phone with me at all times. So at any moment, oh no.
What?
Can you still hear me?
Yeah, you're still there. Don't panic.
Okay, my screen's gone blank, so I'm just going to have to talk to you without seeing me.
We can still see you, so carry on.
I can't see you.
Yeah. But talking, well, there's probably benefits in that. But talking about the Kindle, Paul and Kim, it's not the same as a real book for me. No. I've got hundreds of books on my Kindle and I do read it, but it's just not the same as opening a book. And you know, when you read a really, really good story and you finish it, that feeling of like, now what do I do?
Yeah.
You know, what's that book I've just read? Eleanor Oliphant is okay, or oh my goodness, when that finished, I just thought, what do I do with my life now? I was so engrossed in it, and that's the power of books, isn't it? Or Kindles, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
Curling up with a curly whirly on a bench, you know, and a can of something and reading, it's just lovely.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Other snacks are available.
Yes.
Not for Jules. I want to move on in a discussion now, Kim, if I can. You mentioned ghostwriting, and I just want to kind of emphasize that isn't spiritual, ghost stories. Give us an overview of the kind of ghostwriting that you're doing and what that means and how it works.
Okay, so ghostwriting is basically getting somebody else to write your book for you. And there can be lots of reasons why somebody just doesn't want to write their own book. Time is a huge issue. It takes a long time to write a book. It also takes a lot of practice. It's one of those, it's a bit like playing the violin. You know, you don't just stand up in, on a stage and perform the Four Seasons. It takes practice. And it's the same with writing.
Yeah.
And some people don't have time. They don't have the inclination. They just don't really want to. And if they have an idea for a book, or they've, you know, had a really exciting life and they want to record it, they'll get a ghostwriter to do that for them.
That's great. Can I just ask about your writing process and how you discipline yourself?
Yeah, I have a writing routine, and I write different things at different times of the day. So first thing in the morning is when I write fiction for myself, and then the rest of the day is writing for other people.
Okay. Can I kind of expand on this process of ghostwriting? Because it's something that fascinates me. I have to admit, I'm the world's worst writer. I can't write. I don't like writing. I don't want to be a writer. But I love telling stories. And I tell stories all the time. People even say that some of my stories are exaggerated, but I've told them a million times that that's not true. So I want to explore the process of working with someone as a ghostwriter and how it actually works. So saying you came to me, Kim, and I said, look, I want to write about my experiences of working in the city or something. How does the process work? What happens? Do I have to write some thoughts down for you, or how does it work?
It'd be very much dictated by how you want to work. So if you are happy to jot down some notes and some ideas, that would be great. But if not, we'll just talk about it. Right. So the first discussion we'd have would be who your ideal reader is, who you're writing the book for, and what do you want out of it. So if you have got just a load of amazing stories about working in the city, and you think that that they would be a sort of general interest, that's a particular audience. Whereas if you're using the book sort of to highlight your business or your expertise in a particular area, then that's a completely different book. And at that point, we'd also sort of look at what you wanted to do in terms of publishing, because again, that changes how you work with your ghostwriter. So if you want to self-publish, then we can sort of go ahead and we can write the entire book.
Yep.
Whereas if you want to find a traditional publisher, we won't write the whole book together. We'll get together a structure and a synopsis, very detailed synopsis, and the first three chapters for that to go out as a pitch to traditional publishers, who are very likely to come back and say, oh, yeah, we quite like these chapters, but we want that chapter changing, and we want this in order, and that they will sort of work with you on what content they want it to be. And then, so if you then said, oh, you know, I want to take control over the process, I want this book to be written and published very quickly, so you're going to self-publish it, we'd arrange a series of interviews where you'd talk, and I'd ask you questions to get all of that content, and then I'd write it up. So there'd be lots of chances for you to look at what I'd written, to review it, to say whether you felt the tone was right, if the sort of the approach to it was how you wanted it to be. Because, you know, obviously sort of people have an idea in their minds, this is how I want it to be. And it just takes, you know, sort of you write something and they say, oh, actually I want it to be sort of much chattier, or I want it to be more formal or whatever. And so sort of you're sort of correcting as you go. It's
so you're getting your client's voice almost.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just their voice, it's how they want their voice to come across as well. Sometimes I think that when you first read something that a ghostwriter has written, it's a little bit like hearing your voice on the radio for the first time, and you can kind of think, oh, is that really me? And it's a really interesting process, and it's great for someone like me who's very nosy, because I get to
And do you write freehand or on a computer?
If I'm writing fiction, all the planning and plotting is done in longhand, often in crayon. until I've got sort of quite a detailed structure, and then I write directly onto the laptop. But the ghostwriting is done directly onto the laptop.
I've noticed, because we're all using keypads and computers and things for years. If I try and write now, I've just tried to write a note for my cleaners because I'm here, and I can barely write because the muscles in my hand have completely changed. My writing's abominable now.
It's interesting, isn't it? A few years ago, when voice recording software first came out, IBM had a product that you could speak to, and it turned it into written text.
And I
just wondered if I could write something by just telling my stories. The problem with that is, with my accent and the kind of words I use, once it typed it came out as gobbledygook. But I want to go back to something that Kim said about your voice in writing, and that's the thing that's always dissuaded me. Whenever I write and read it back, it doesn't sound like me. And I don't know how you feel about that. Whether you should have a written persona as well as a spoken persona.
Yeah, I think people have both.
Yeah.
And I think the writing persona changes depending on what you're writing, which is only sort of natural, really, that the voice that you use to write a letter to your grandchildren is a completely different voice to the one you use if you're writing a blog post.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And so, that's a very good point, actually. Yeah.
And so that they'll all be your voice. They'll all be identifiable as you, but they're different. And in the same way that sort of when we show up in different places, we are different aspects of ourselves. And it's not that we're being false or fake in any way. It's just your professional persona when you turn up to a networking group is completely different to your persona to, you know, when you're meeting your friends in a coffee shop. But you're still being authentic.
And
the trick is to find that authentic voice that suits the thing that you're writing, and that will also speak coherently and cogently to the audience that you want to address. That's the challenge.
All right. While you were saying there, it struck me as well. Do you have a particular place, a physical place, where you prefer to write?
Yeah.
She's got a little murder mystery den, of course.
Yeah.
Skull and crossbones.
I have a few places that I write. So in the olden days, when we used to be able to go and write in coffee shops without wearing face masks and things.
Well, that was the classic J.K. Rowling, wasn't it? Started writing, sitting in coffee shops.
Yeah, so that's where a lot of my plotting happens. There's something about that buzz in a coffee shop.
And I guess you can watch people and what they're wearing and get some ideas, you know, from that, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it is sort of interesting just to see what other people are doing. And sort of.
So if you're in a Gloucester coffee shop, you may be in one of Kim's books.
You may be a character in a murder mystery. Yeah,
exactly. Or I might be sort of walking the streets looking for, that sounds terrible, walking the streets.
Times are hard, Kim, you know, I mean.
And it might well be outside your house or something.
We have, we're on the seafront here, and we've got an upside down house because of the view, and we watch people all the time. We people watch, you know, because we work from home and even before COVID. Yeah. And it's just fascinating to watch everybody, even when they're parallel park. I have great fun watching people parallel park, you know.
Kim, she's got a telescope in her living room upstairs, and she quite often rings me and says, "Oh, there's someone drowning out in Whitstable Bay. I can see them waving."
Hail! Yeah, it's but people watching is fascinating. But I think, Paul Andrews, we need to do a whole new show on the sacred Aboriginals. I'm just fascinated by. I think it's because I grew up watching Skippy.
But, oh well, obviously, yeah.
But then, you know, there is a mystery around the Aborigines and their way of life, as there is in the Native American Indians. And, it, you know, that beautiful, the way that they live, which has been destroyed. So can we do a whole show on that, Paul Andrews, with Kim?
On Aboriginal lifestyles.
With Dr. Kim.
It's a fascinating subject, as you say, you know, I mean, it is. And, of course, I would say, this is completely off topic now, but I would say that an Aboriginal lifestyle and a Native American lifestyle an Amazonian Indian lifestyle are just more modern versions of how all human beings evolved in the early days. It's just that, you know, in a large part of the world, we've kind of become more technological. And those lifestyles are the last remaining facets in the world of how things used to be. So I think it's incredibly fascinating from an anthropological point of view and just from a storytelling point of view to capture that while we still can, while there are still people that can tell the stories firsthand secondhand. Yeah.
And the fact that that we have destroyed their habitat, not personally, but, you know, and the way that they've had to turn to alcohol to cope with it. And the fact that I only know one famous Yvonne Goolagong, that's the only person I know. I'm sure there must be hundreds who have clawed out.
What fascinates me about that, though, in line with what we're talking about here, is during the whole 300,000 years existence of Homo sapiens, everything in our lives has been about stories. All of our societies are based on storytelling and passing down stories and myths and creation stories and where we come from. We have this, as human beings, we have this massive storytelling part of our makeup. And since the invention of first the alphabet and then movable type, we've done that in words. But before that, we just did that in
drawings,
stories.
Cave drawings.
Art and all the rest of it. I mean, I've just got back from France and I was just around the corner from the Lasso Caves, which have got 35,000 year old cave drawings of bison and horses and stuff like that. So, and it's part of a moving story. So the whole storytelling thing is a very human driver.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that's interesting about Aboriginal people is that these stories are still they're still very, very relevant today.
And, absolutely. Yeah.
Aboriginal people, I mean, they can be very highly educated, with a doctorate, working as a lawyer, living in the city, using all the technology, etc. And their connection to country is still very much dictated by dreaming stories that are perhaps 40,000 years old. So I think sort of with Aboriginal people, sometimes they get a bad press if they're still living in a very sort of traditional way, and they get a bad press if they're living in a more contemporary way but still traditional beliefs.
And I think that's maybe what's going wrong in our society, that we've lost contact, many of us, with the earth. And, you know, like just walking barefoot in my garden makes me feel better than if I'm spending 8 hours in this very hot attic office. And the minute I get outside, I feel normal. And the Aborigines have kept that, hopefully, that connection with the land and with the earth.
But that's the point that Kim's making, though, isn't it? Is that, you know, to what extent do you hang on to an ancient tradition and a way of doing things, or to what extent do you adapt to the modern world? It's a difficult call, isn't it?
I don't think the two are incompatible.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to work with Aboriginal colleagues who lived in the town. They sent their children to private school, and every year they went through law business in the middle of nowhere, where they sort of took part in initiations and on sort of teaching the next generation about their country. They used to go out at the weekends hunting, not with a spear but with a rifle, but hunting traditional food, and that food was distributed according to traditional laws. So this sort of boundary sort of between traditional living and modern living, I don't think it really applies when you start looking at how the majority of indigenous people perhaps live. It's a continuation.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I get that. I think that's absolutely true.
I'm just thinking of Neighbours now, and I'm just thinking.
For goodness sake.
I haven't watched it since Charlene and what was his name, you know, a long time ago when my kids were small. But was there an Aboriginal character?
I haven't watched it for a very long time.
I don't believe there was. And I think that's very interesting. But I mean, who was it? Charlene and somebody or other.
Anyway, who knows?
Kylie Minogue and Jason Donovan. That's how long it was. But yeah.
Anyway, I want to come back just to finish off with Kim on the kind of stuff she's doing. One of the interesting things, Kim, is I think there's something like 3 trillion websites in operation in the world now, and a lot of them require content. So for me, writing and content production is a massive, massive thing. I know that you write magazine articles. Mm-hmm. Do you write blogs as well?
Yes, I do write blogs for certain clients. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. You know, writing is one of those things that, despite the fact that we've got, social media, internet and all the rest of it, it's actually enhanced the need for the written word rather than detracted from it, in my personal opinion. You know, 'cause we need so much written content, for websites, for blogs, for news sites and all the rest of that kind of thing. So, if people want to find out more about how they can either read your books, read your articles, or work with you as a ghostwriter, what's the best way of getting hold of you, Kim?
The best way to find out about the books and about my time in Australia, etc., is to have a look at my author website, which is kimfleet.com.
Right.
And if people are interested in talking to me about potential ghostwriting projects, probably best to have a look at my LinkedIn profile.
Right. Cool. The link for the website is actually on the Business Radio website, so you can find it there and find out about Kim's website there, and then find her on LinkedIn at Kim Fleet. Kim, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Funker Show. It's been a fascinating story that you've told, and you've certainly inspired Jules to go and rewatch old episodes of Neighbours, if nothing else.
Oh, no.
Yeah. but it was great talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us. We wish you continued success with what you're doing. Have a fantastic weekend, and we'll talk to you again sometime soon.
And do let me know when your sacred site comes back, if it will come back into print.
I'm hoping that it's going to come out soon in ebook format.
Yeah, and I'll follow all the others as well. You're on Twitter, aren't you, as well? Yeah. Okay, good.
Oh, thank you ever so much. It's been
fascinating.
Yes. Have a super day.
Bye.
Fantastic.
Thank you,
Kim.
Hope the rain clears up.
Bye.
Cheers now.
Bye.
That was
fascinating, Paul.
It was really, really interesting. My problem is I can't see you, obviously.
Oh, well, that's probably, you know, I could be doing anything then.
I know. I'm sure you were making real gestures while I'm there.
I've brought my Scottish oat cakes to show everybody, but of course nobody will watch this anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe we should release the videos, but we do make funny faces, I know. Right. So.
Anyway, I'm struggling to see you because I can't, but you can see me, yeah?
Yes. So FSB Kent have said they're absolutely thrilled to be sponsoring this year's virtual apprenticeship. It's a graduation ceremony that's coming on the 2nd of October. Now you can find out more about this by going to kandmappgrad.org. So kandmappgrad.org. Also, listener, the Canterbury Festival is set to go ahead this autumn, which is brilliant news despite the coronavirus, the vicious virus as we call it on this show. Mm-hmm. Organisers have confirmed that Canterbury Festival is still set to go ahead this autumn despite the pandemic, while many of the city's major events, including its Christmas ice rink, the Marlowe's pantomime, That's your cue? Oh, no, it isn't.
Oh, no, it's not.
And Canterbury Pride have been cancelled due to the COVID crisis. Those behind the hugely popular annual celebration of the arts have decided the show must go on. And they've announced plans to run a reduced festival this October with small-scale events, social distancing and limited capacities. So diary date, 2nd of October, that one. It's they haven't given me a date, actually. But it's autumn.
Fantastic. Did you miss out on the free 30-day social media challenge? Due to high demand, ZC Social Media are running it again on the 7th of September. Increase your awareness, build your audience, and get results. You can find out more about the ZC Social Media Challenge by going to www.zcsocialmedia.com/30-day-social-media-challenge. That's 30-day social media challenge. zcsocialmedia.com/30-day-social-media-challenge. Check it out. It's incredibly good fun.
Yeah, it is. It's lively, that's for sure. And we've had a tweet from Telcare Limited. Hello to the team. And they say, are you paying too much for your telecoms? When did you last check? Time for an audit, they say. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
We keep these things going. And they're also suggesting that moving offices can bring a long list of stressful to-do lists. Yeah. And they say, we can take your telecom list if you need help. They can take it on. So that's very, very good.
Yeah, fantastic. Jenna Group are delighted to promote the forthcoming Shepway Sports Trust Charity Golf Day as the main sponsor of the event for the third year running. They say, we're delighted that the trusts are able to proceed with the day, which will, of course, adhere to all enhanced safety measures, heightened hygiene and social distancing. And this allows them to raise vital funds to continue the amazing work they do. You can find out more about the trust by going to their website, which is shepwaysportstrust.org. That's shepwaysportstrust.org. The day is being held on Friday, the 11th of September at the absolutely glorious Broom Park Golf Club. That's just outside Canterbury.
A lovely venue.
Yeah, it's just £40 a person and the format is Texas Scramble. It's a relaxed and enjoyable day, and I'm sure even more welcome this year as a chance to get back to some form of safe networking. And that's been sent to me by Ella Brocklebank. And I'll give you the website again where you can register to take part in this. It's shepwaysportstrust.org.
And we've had a tweet from the lovely folks at Chips and Dinks saying a good hello to those guys. And also, did we mention Athelbray? I'm not sure if we did.
I did give them a quick mention, but you can give them another mention if you like.
Well, hello to the folks at Athelbray. I've lost it now, but I'll tell you later, probably.
Right. I want to tell you about this. If you'd like to see a snapshot of the county's economic recovery following the impact of the health crisis, they've launched a digital dashboard. It provides a host of data on how businesses are responding to the challenges. The Economic Recovery Dashboard provides a range of indicators designed to support and drive Kent and Medway's recovery from COVID-19, and it is now live on the County Council website. You can find out about it by going to kent.gov.uk/about-the-council/information-and-data. So that's kent.gov.uk/about-the-council/information-and-data to see the Economic Recovery Dashboard for Kent and Medway.
Oh, and I found the Athelbray tweet. They say it's a busy day in the Athelbray office for the operations director, Kate, starting to put into action some of the ideas following our strategic planning yesterday. And both virtual classrooms and face-to-face COVID-safe options are providing. And then it goes on. I can't read anymore, sorry, because it's on a blog, LinkedIn, but right. They had a great strategic planning meeting and they're putting it all into place. So well done, guys.
Fantastic. We're almost at the end of the show. Whatever your business strengths, you need to shout out about them. So why not enter the Maidstone Business Awards 2020 and the Ashford Business Awards 2020? You can do it now and it's a free entry. To find out about it, to find out all the categories, to find out the eligibility to register, if you go to www.businessawardskent.co.uk. That's www.businessawardskent.co.uk. Have you got anything else that you need to read, Jules?
No, I'm fine, really, but I can always find more if we can't wait.
No, I've got lots of stuff, so don't worry.
Go on, then, you go, and I'll have a Scottish oat cake. They're from Duncan's.
Yeah, I would if I were you.
Duncan's a D-side.
The Federation of Small Business Kent, maximise your membership with What's In It For Me, which is taking place on Wednesday, the 9th of September, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Now more than ever is the time to make sure you're making the most of your FSB benefits. So if you're a member of the FSB in Kent and Medway and you want to like to find out all the benefits that you're eligible for, you can go to this virtual event. To register free for the event, it's fsb.org.uk/event calendar/FSB Kent, What's In It For Me. So that's fsb.org.uk/event calendar/FSB Kent, What's In It For Me.
I love that, What's In It For Me.
Yeah. Do you know what, Jules? I think that brings us to the end of another show.
Well, I'm saying that little boiled egg I had has sort of, you know, gone through the system now and I'm hungry.
Ah, right. It didn't sustain you for long then.
No, it was a bit rushed. You saw me. It was like bolting it down at 5 to whatever the time was.
Fantastic.
So, yes, thanks to our sponsor.
Yeah, Whitcomb HR for sponsoring us once again this week. We really do appreciate it. A huge thank you to our two fantastic guests, Amanda Parvin, Ethical HR and Human-to-Human Communication, and to the lovely Dr. Kim Fleet, author and ghostwriter. To my co-host, my fantastic co-host, the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin. You've been listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio and Biz Radio. We'll be back with another show next week. Stay safe, everybody. Stay happy. And we'll see you all soon. Take care now. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.